Hi, hello. Welcome to Mary's Cup of Tea, the self-love podcast for women, though all self-lovers are welcome here. I'm Mary. I write and speak about self-love, and I'm best known for my book, The Gift of Self-Love, and I also host retreats for women. And this is the podcast that will inspire you to love yourself. Real quick, before we dive in, I want to make sure you know about my book, The Gift of Self-Love. It's a workbook to help you build confidence, recognize your worth, and learn to love who you are. It's available anywhere books are sold. Thousands of people have it, love it, and have told me that it has greatly benefited their self-love journey, and I hope it'll do the same for you. And now let's get into the podcast. I think when I see internet content around self-love, it's kind of split into two camps. The first camp is like really radical self-acceptance. It's like, you don't need to do anything to fix yourself. Self-love is just about existing as you are. And I completely agree with that. But then there's another camp where people say self-love is about becoming the best version of yourself, about the glow up, about who you see yourself to be and like who you want to become. And at first, for a long time, I felt so torn because there's times where I need that energy of like, I just want to exist and be and not feel like I have to change myself after so many years of like toxic self-improvement, specifically when it comes to like image appearance. But then there's times where I get this energy and motivation where I'm like, I know I can do better. I know I have some goals, some aspirations, and I want to chase those dreams. And I want to be this version of myself that I, you know, yearn for in my mind. And anytime you find yourself comparing yourself to somebody else, that's just a little sign that you see your potential or maybe your unlived potential in that person too. So self-love to me is simultaneously about returning home to yourself, knowing that you don't need fixing, kind of unlearning a lot of societal conditions. And there is a part where self-love involves creating a new sense of self. Self-love is both about unlearning and relearning. We are unlearning diet culture and relearning how to feed ourselves. We are unlearning shame and relearning embodiment, right? Like really being comfortable in this vessel, maybe even feeling empowered and sexy in it. We are unlearning toxic relationship dynamics and relearning healthy attachment. To that, maybe you are unlearning hyper independence and relearning trust, or maybe you're unlearning hyper codependence and relearning sovereignty. Like it just depends. It's also individual and nuanced. Unlearning people pleasing and relearning self pleasing, unlearning generational trauma, breaking those patterns, and maybe even building like your own identity, your own family, right? Not just your family of origin. So it's always like unlearning and relearning, shedding a little bit and recreating to fill that space. You know, it will always be cyclical. It will always be seasonal. It'll always be nuanced. And to me, self-love is a balance of both. Number two, constantly doing something can be just as toxic and detrimental as never doing anything. This is really about embracing rest as productive, maybe not even needing to reframe it as productive and not trying to live your life by what's productive or not and measure your worth on productivity. But nevertheless, like, again, we go through periods of activity in our lives and, you know, striving and chasing and expanding. And then other times we are contracting, we're hibernating, we're holding back, and we're resting. Again, it is both. So constantly doing something, needing to do something all the time is just as big of a sign that you might be, I don't know, depressed, anxious, out of sorts, not in alignment with your true self. just like if you were never doing anything and laying in bed all day and feeling super demotivated for extended amounts of time. And I think we kind of recognize the latter part as like a red flag that something's going on with our mental health, but rarely do we acknowledge that like rushing, go, 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 like really fast, frantic energy as also being a sign that we are not calibrated, we are not grounded, we are not operating from a place of self-love. Number three, your appearance is only as important as you make it. And I know the first instinct is to believe that I have to put myself together in order to be taken seriously. I have to look a certain way in order to be attractive to people. I have to, you know, present this front, this facade, and that is going to make me somehow more successful. To an extent, yes, that is patriarchal conditioning, especially on women, right? To an extent. But I think we are at a point now where we have the power to resist that. And the more we do, the more we actually prove to ourselves that a lot of the things we feel like we have to do, I'm not going to say they're self-imposed, because again, there's like social invisible forces that have made us feel that way. But we also have a lot more agency and autonomy than we think we do. And every time we show up as our natural selves, every time you think about getting lip filler and then decide not to and save your money and listen to something like this podcast instead, that is a small act of resistance. And that's not just for yourself. That's also for like collective female empowerment too. I have so many friends who do all sorts of things, and I've been tempted myself to do all kinds of things, especially as I hit my later 20s and I'm starting to notice things on my face that haven't been there before, or, you know, my boobs being a little bit lower on my torso than they have before. Like all of these are real, real thoughts. But the more I unsubscribe and the more I recognize that, I'm sure you've heard this before, but pretty is not the rent I pay to exist in this world. So for me, that looks like, I call it tone it down. This comes from Dr. Renee Englund's work. She wrote the book called Beauty Sick, and she talks about how our whole society culture is beauty sick. The obsession with female bodies and appearance is making all of us so, so sick, and our perception of what's normal is so skewed. But she suggests that instead of, again, you don't have to be super extreme to some extent, like we're all kind of perpetuating certain norms, right? And some of them are a lot harder to unsubscribe from than others. But maybe there are small things that you don't care about as much that you can let go of. A non-exhaustive list for me, for example, is I very, very rarely wax my eyebrows. And it's been kind of like this F you, because I've always been so insecure about my bushy eyebrows and just like hair in general, like Jewish girl hair everywhere. So very rarely do I wax my eyebrows. And then to that, like very rarely do I also shave my legs. And if I do, I use a trimmer, like even down there. I don't press a razor to my skin ever anymore. Maybe one day I will rock a 70s bush. But right now, not pressing a razor to my skin feels like a small act of beauty resistance. And I'm wondering, what are those things for you? How can you tone down your consumption of beauty? I don't really follow any beauty influencers either. I don't follow any like celebrity beauty people. Like you can go through who I follow and you will not see Kim Kardashian or Hailey Bieber or any of these like typical like beauty inspos. That's just a big solid no for me. But what is on your list of toning down your, is it an addiction to beauty, or toning down our, let's call it, attachment to beauty and beauty culture? I highly, highly recommend a Substack newsletter by Jessica DeFino. And she writes about exactly this, beauty culture, how it's all fake, how it's all made up. It just really puts stuff in historical and economic perspective. It's actually kind of crazy how brainwashed we are to believe that this stuff is like natural and it's a part of life and it just objectively looks good. That couldn't be farther from the truth. Like, what objectively looks good has changed throughout time and place, and it depends on a lot of, on oppression and keeping people oppressed, not just women, but there's also race and class that goes into that. So the more you start learning, the less you want to, at least the less compelled I feel to contribute to it. Or at the very least, you're a little bit more aware and you take a second to like pause, breathe, and ask yourself, who am I doing this for? Is it necessary? Is it worth this amount of time, money, energy, attention? Is there somewhere else that I could put my precious mental real estate? And those questions sometimes fuck me up, honestly. Highly, highly recommend the episode with Dr. Renee Englund. Anything I recommend, I'm usually pretty good about linking it in the description. So feel free to go over there and check it out. So anyway, number three, a self-love lesson that I'm taking into my late 20s, to reiterate, is that your appearance is only as important as you make it. Number four, this is the one that I've thought most deeply about for this podcast episode, and one that feels quite revolutionary. Your insecurities, once embraced, become your greatest strengths. Your insecurities, once embraced, become your greatest strengths. If you feel insecure about anything, about your personality, your looks, your life, chances are that if you were to lean into it, double down on it, embrace it, really own it, chances are that that's where your power is. That is like the key to unlocking exactly who you need to be to kind of like reach this next evolved version of yourself. Anything you can think of. Like for me, it's, Mary, you talk too much. Like you just cannot shut the fuck up. I've mentioned this so many times on the podcast before as a big insecurity of mine. It still is. But I also am talking to a wall right now. Like I'm literally just sitting here and talking to myself, and somehow it's given me this insane, amazing opportunity to reach thousands of people through this like audio video channel that are listening on the other end, that maybe you do think that I talk too much, but you're still listening. You know what? You're still here. And that's kind of a win, because as somebody who my whole life, I've just always trying to be too cool for school, you know, apathetic, like don't really care to talk or communicate, kind of put on this, I don't know, intimidating front because I was just so scared to connect and be vulnerable, to now, you know, a decade later, since being that kind of teenager, really embracing like this bubbly, warm, like chatty, talkative, like saying shit out of my ass sometime and like being a little bit awkward and stumbling over my words. And the more I try to talk to make a situation better, the worse it gets. And it's almost laughable, like the amount of weird stuff that I say if you were to hang out with me in real life. But somehow, like, this has become my thing, like podcasting, writing words, like I'm a wordy, nerdy girl. And I've kind of am learning a little bit to like that about myself, or at the very least to not flagellate myself over it. So what is that for you? Like if you feel like you don't know what path to pursue because you're so interested in so many things and you have lots of passions and hobbies, your multifacetedness is exactly your gift, your strength. And it's the exact same place where that insecurity is, right? If you feel like you're insecure because you're not cool enough or funny enough or smart enough or pretty enough, like one of the few things that I love about content creation and being in this like influencer space is I've observed that the creators, the influencers who actually like stand out, they're the ones who have embraced some like quirky, weird trait of themselves or like a passion or something like super niche and super, you know, seemingly, I guess, odd from what we were told, like a cool, you know, good woman is supposed to be. And then when they defy all the odds, defy all those stereotypes, like fully lean in and double down, that's when they're magnetic as fuck. That's when they're like so much fun to follow. That's when their creativity shines through. That's like the people that I want to be around, like the people who are like weird and don't apologize for it. Hey, self-lover, sorry to interrupt, but do you have my self-love playlist? There's over 300, if not 400 songs on it that are so fun and uplifting and empowering, and I think will really be perfect for when you're getting ready, trying to hype yourself up, dealing with a bad body image day, or anytime you just want a little boost of self-love, these tracks will do it for you. So head to maryscupoftea.com/playlist to get it and know that I am dancing and jamming with you from afar. Cheers. I like people who, even if they're like, even if they admit like I am unwell mentally inside, like I'm a little kooky, when people like own that, it's just so refreshing. Like it's just freaking awesome. One of the content creators that comes to mind that I just enjoy following is Elise Myers. She just shows up as her messy, quirky, goofy self. Her hair's never done. She's never wearing makeup. She tells these funny stories. I imagine that historically her awkwardness might not have been as well received, like in real life, as it is now on the internet. And I know that she gets like her fair share of hate too. But it's interesting how like her showing up, telling an awkward, funny, weird, cute story is just so endearing and so special and so relatable and inspiring to me, you know? And to that, this is kind of like a side tangent. Constraints, so things that feel disadvantageous. Hear me out. Let me finish the thought and then I'll explain if it doesn't make sense right away. Constraints lead to creative solutions. So I saw this TikTok a really long time ago, and it was this Latina woman, young girl, actually, this like Latina girl who is standing in her kitchen, like her parents' kitchen, because she lives with her parents, and it's, you know, a normal kitchen, like a normal apartment building kitchen. And she wrote something like, I really want to be a content creator, but I don't have like an aesthetic enough looking space to create content. And I feel so insecure about that because I see all these influencers in their beautiful kitchens, like creating their gorgeous lifestyle content, going to Pilates. But she said something like, there's all this like food stuffed on top of the refrigerator and like the kitchen's a mess. And I don't know how to create content because I'm so insecure about showing up like this. Anyway, the amount of positive feedback that she got from people who are being like, no, girl, this is exactly what we want to see. This is exactly what my kitchen looks like. This is how I grew up too. Like, I want to see you creating content in your messy immigrant home, small little apartment kitchen. Like, that's what we want, is that realness. So if you have an insecurity or even like beyond the internet, let me give some more examples of like beyond content creation. Like, I see this with mental health so much in general. The person who is anxious, for example, is also the most like attentive and aware and so kind and considerate of others, right? Like, anxiety in some ways is this hypervigilance, and that can be a superpower when applied in certain aspects. So we don't have to completely get rid of anxiety. We just have to like soothe it in the areas that it's hurting us more than it's helping us, but keeping some of those parts of ourselves in certain regards. Or like the friend who struggles with depression, like I hate to say this, but some of these people, they're like creative geniuses. I wrote in my book, I think it was the first or second chapter of my book, and my sister loves this story. My mom is annoyed that I highlighted it so much because it's caused problems in her and my sister's household. But basically, when my sister was little, she's not anymore. She's like a very clean person now. But when she was like 7, 8, 9, she used to be like a pretty messy individual, like a pretty messy little girl. And it was a battle to get her to clean her room. And she's also so funny and spunky and confident. And like, I just have absolutely, it's such an honor to watch her grow up. But I remember she was like 8 and her and mom were fighting again about her cleaning her room. And she was like, "Mom, it's not my fault I'm so messy. It's just because I'm so creative." And I wrote about that in my book, just to this point of like your insecurities, like they're the duality. It is showing up again, y'all. The duality that it's both, like you are messy and maybe that like messiness is what makes you so creative too. In the case of my sister, those of us who struggled with an eating disorder or disordered eating, I remember Dr. Anita Johnston in episode 150 of this podcast. Please, if you are a recovery warrior or you know anybody who's struggling with disordered eating, please, please, please send them this episode. Listen to it. It is so good. Dr. Anita is an eating disorder psychologist who owns a treatment center in Hawaii. And she came on the show and she said something so profound. She started talking about how eating disorder recovery is fun for her. And I was like, wait a second, like, how is it fun? Like, that's not the first way that I would describe recovery. And here's what she goes on to say.
"And I find the struggle with eating and food still so compelling because it allows you to kind of get a glimpse, get an idea of things that normally appear to be unrelated. And when you can find connections, there's something that happens that's really fun and exciting. It's a strange thing how something that can be so painful, when you can get to a deeper meaning of it and have this aha moment, you get illumination and levity. So it's sort of like it's enlightening in both ways. You can see things more clearly, but things lighten up and it can even be funny."
Funny.
Funny.
Okay, wait, tell me how.
What? Right?
I like seeing levity in difficult situations because I think in recovery, everything feels so deep and dark and heavy and just not good. And I think it's really healthy to sometimes like laugh at yourself, laugh at the situation.
And I tried to figure this out. Why is it fun or why is it funny? And there's something when you see something so clearly, that's what humor really is, right? If you think about what's a joke is when you're able to see connections between things that appear to be unrelated and it makes you laugh because you would never have thought of it this way, but all of a sudden it all comes together and it's funny.
And we go on in that conversation to talk about how eating disorder recovery, it has moments of humor. It has moments of lightness. It has moments of, yeah, darkness and learnings and just taking in so much about yourself and the world around you. And that's what makes you resilient and empowered and stronger. But also where your insecurities are exactly where your gifts are, where your strengths are, where your just like hidden little superpowers that once embraced become so freaking magnetic. But the hard part is really embracing them, leaning into them, owning them. But I know that you can do it. What is that for you? What are you a little insecure about, but can also see how that same insecurity highlights something that others find rare, attractive, cute, cool, a little strange, but also it's up to how you own it, right? And people are just going to reflect the energy that you bring to it. We must invite all parts of ourselves to sit at the table and welcome each and every one of them. A book that I'm reading, and it's probably the best like psychology book that I've read in a while, No Bad Parts by Dr. Richard Schwartz. He's the psychologist who kind of came up with the framework of internal family systems, in case you've heard of it. But it's a therapeutic approach where basically you think of yourself as having all these parts, you know, not just like your current self and your inner child, but like you have an angry self, you have a confused self, you have an empowered self, you have a funny self, you have a, like so many selves. You have the self that is still upset that your dad didn't come to your big dance recital when you were 12. That was very personal. But yes, like I still have that self and I feel that self showing up and feeling like so hurt and abandoned and angry and sad, right? But that self needs to be just as welcome at the table as the part of me that hosts retreats for women and has them come from all over the world and leads these transformational workshops and talks about confidence and empowerment and self-love. That is also a part of me. And one does not negate the other. We must welcome all of them. And that's what creates this like holistic, well-rounded, fully, I'm not going to say healed, but I'm going to say embodied self. So where your insecurities are, that's exactly where your strengths and gifts are. I cannot understate how firmly I believe that. Number 6, this is the one that I mentioned, might be a little bit confronting. Anytime you admire someone, those same traits are within you. Anytime you hate on someone, those same traits are also within you. So perception is projection. Our judgments of others carry very important intel about ourselves. How you see somebody else, what you judge about them, what you admire about them, what you don't like about them, there's a little part of yourself that also has that. So it's dual in nature. Like the light you see in others is shining within you too. So yes, you are as amazing as you think that that person you compare yourself to is. And the person that you're constantly judging and gossiping about and talking shit about and like not really vibing with, there are also parts of yourself that have those same traits and aspects, and maybe you're afraid of them. You haven't explored them yet. You haven't embraced them. You haven't admitted certain things to yourself. And I think that that is like, that is ultimate self-awareness, is when you can go from judging someone else to being like, wait, this is actually a judgment of myself too. And the only reason I'm so worked up about this situation or this person is because I sense a little something, something that feels a little too familiar. And I do not like that. I'm not willing to admit that to myself. So it's a lot easier to just hate on them, right? I think that that's, you know, confronting, but important. And to me, that relates to self-love because, as I always say, self-awareness is the foundation of self-love. And if we're welcoming all parts of ourselves to the table, if we are embracing our insecurities and seeing how they are the gateway to our strengths, then maybe some of that information can be discovered by observing the way that we judge others, interact with others, what we admire or see in others, because that shit is also within too. Okay, the last one, number 7 of the 7 self-love lessons that I'm taking into my late 20s. Number 7 is do not delay your joy. Do not delay your joy. A lot of the times we think that any kind of self-healing growth journey has a destination where once reached, then we will be happy. Then we will be confident. Then we will be free to pursue what we want. And we're going to find the partner of our dreams and we're going to build this house and this life and it's going to be perfect. And I'm so sorry if I've ever contributed to this myth, because obviously I promote self-love as a very important mindset, belief, way of being and living. However, you do not need to fully love yourself or be fully healed from trauma or be totally self-aware about every single thing with no mistakes. Like, no, you must feel and express your joy right now, no matter how broken you might feel or no matter how healed you might feel. Do not delay your joy. Joy is meant to be felt amid pain. Wow. There's that duality factor again. Joy is actually amplified amid pain. Like, have you ever noticed that some of your best memories might be when you've had like some of your hardest times? Like, I think about the times where I was going through my breakup and my girlfriend showed up at my apartment with a bottle of wine and a joint, and we were so poor. We had to like literally scrap together change just to afford this wine. And we sat on the floor of my apartment because I had just moved out of my ex's place, could not afford anything. I had this like styrofoam pad, and that's what we sat on, drinking wine. When I tell you, I have never laughed that hard ever in my life. I don't know. Like, it was just so therapeutic to be with my friend at the time. And I still honor that moment, that time in my life as being vital. And that joy that we shared together is just some of my fondest memories. And it was also when I was like the most broken and depressed and sad and alone and poor and not knowing what to do with my life. And yet there's joy there. I was really reminded of that in a big way when I went to Cuba, and I did a whole episode on it 2 weeks back, where I talked about how the Cuban culture, like, they just still so admirably possess this joie de vivre, this joy of life, where they're singing in the streets and dancing and smoking cigars and playing domino and laughing more than I've ever seen any people laugh together. Like, there was just so much laughter, and that's all despite the intense economic struggle that the entire country has been in for decades. And It's just wild. Like, there's so much joy to be felt amidst pain. And so do not resist that. Always lean into it. Always find a moment, a small thing to delight over. And never, ever apologize for the things that bring you joy. As I started saying lately, no more guilty pleasures. These are entitled pleasures. Joy is your birthright. Joy is an act of resistance. Joy is survival. It's like when I host retreats, like, yes, we do this deep inner work, but so much of what makes it healing is being together and making those stupid jokes and cackling over God knows what and getting to the point of comfort with yourself and with the people that you're with, that you're just your silly, goofy self. And that's what I want you to be, your silly, goofy self that embraces your insecurities and that finds strengths in them and that honors both dual parts of you, all the parts of you. And I'm going to leave you with this poem that I love by Mary Oliver. It's called "Don't Hesitate." If you suddenly and unexpectedly feel joy, don't hesitate. Give into it. There are plenty of lives and whole towns destroyed or about to be. We are not wise and not very often kind. And much can never be redeemed. Still, life has some possibility left. Perhaps this is its way of fighting back, that sometimes something happens better than all the riches or power in the world. It could be anything, but very likely you notice it in the instance when love begins. Anyway, that's often the case. Anyway, whatever it is, don't be afraid of its plenty. Joy is not made to be a crumb. If you're enjoying our self-love podcast, please take a moment to leave a comment or a review letting me know what your biggest takeaway was. As somebody who works mostly behind the scenes on this podcast, I love hearing from you, and it just keeps me connected to the purpose, which is always to spread the gift of self-love.